We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 319. This is the 2019 Yankees, where everyone's going on the injured list, and they're setting franchise records for strikeouts, Scott.
Yeah, it's some ugly, ugly stuff. Ugly baseball. Today was just another day of injuries and not hitting the baseball and striking out and looking for home runs and not getting it and frustration building early in the season. It's like a rollover. It's like the last season didn't end and we're just continuing on with this shitty baseball, because that's what we're seeing right now. And it's tough to watch.
This almost seems worse than like even the low points of last year. I mean, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm just, you know, fresh in my mind, so it seems a lot worse. But my God, have these five games since opening day seemed just pitiful. Just everything, top to bottom. The not hitting, the strikeouts, the defense. Like, it's not fun to watch.
Well, you know what it is that you build up that excitement level for the beginning of the season, and you have such high expectations when it's 0-0. Everybody is, you know, on the even keel, and you're ready to go. You're confident in your team. You have a good team on paper. You like the things that were done in the offseason. They come out, they win opening day. Luke Voit hits a massive home run, and we're all excited and pumped up about that. And then it's just like the wheels fall off. I mean, there's no like stumbling around. Like, there's just, the wheels are off, like just off.
Yeah, they're on the, just, you know, skidding on the pavement on just rims. It's, yeah, just sparks flying everywhere.
And we're flying down because we flew over the handlebars, and we're tumbling now next to the bike, and it's a disaster.
It almost got today towards the end of the game when Matthew Boyd, who I said in the little post-game recap, like, this is not vintage Randy Johnson or vintage Pedro Martinez we're talking about. This is Matthew Boyd, who I understand is not a bad pitcher, but he struck out 15 or I think it was, yeah, 15 Yankees or 14 Yankees at one point. And then the bullpen comes in and just strikes out more people. It's like, it almost got comical because you knew what was going to happen. It was 0-2, but like, you look down at your phone to check Twitter. You look back up, it's 0-2. Here comes a slider in the dirt and another swing and miss.
Yeah, it's bad. It's frustrating to watch. And today I had to go to my father-in-law's. We had a little dinner for him. It was just like, we all went to a pizza place at 5:30, trying to schedule it early, you know, because 7 o'clock games happen. And then all of a sudden we look at the schedule, we're like, what the, a 4 o'clock game. So I missed the second half of the game, and I didn't miss a goddamn thing. No. I literally missed nothing. There were a bunch of strikeouts. I saw the Tulowitzki injuries, or I saw him leave there. Nobody really saw an injury, but I saw all that. And then there were just more strikeouts and the game was over.
The you said 7 o'clock games happen. There were no 7 o'clock games this week.
Just usually it's 7 o'clock, right?
And you know what? That was the only positive takeaway from this week, was those 6:35 starts. I loved ending around 9:40 at night. That's perfect.
I was very happy with that. And I joked on Twitter that, you know, it's like, is this the fastest game over? We've said this in the past. Like, no, yeah, they just trick you into it. But that's totally okay with me. And even the 4 o'clock game, like, I was really good with it until, you know, in-laws. And you know, I appreciate them, by the way, because they were shooting for the 7 o'clock game, and that's why we did it early. So I do appreciate that. But yeah, the 4 o'clock game I was fine with too. Like, all these early games are great.
It's
terrible baseball earlier in the day.
What I think we've discovered, though, it's not the length of game; it's the how late at night it finishes. Because most people, when they finish watching a baseball game, or maybe they don't even watch until the last out, they just go to bed and it's over. But you and I mean, this is a second job for us. We enjoy doing it. We love doing it. That's why we haven't missed a week of episodes since 2015. But it is still a commitment. So it's like our night does not end when the Yankees either shake hands or just sulk back into the dugout.
No. And the earlier starts after you have a kid are becoming way more of like a godsend They need to just implement this throughout because look at this. We're talking about, this is the highlight of Yankees baseball this week, is the freaking start time. And that's not a joke. That is not an over-exaggeration.
I didn't start this conversation in irony. I started it in all seriousness. Like I have. Thank you, Yankees, for starting at 6:35. I wish that the teams that they were going to play on the road would adopt those as well. You know, 4 o'clock maybe is inconvenient because like you had a dinner and I wasn't home from work in time, but still, whatever. We're going to talk about all the bad crap that happened this week. A lot to talk about. Quickly want to mention, so yesterday we released George's Box episode 3 on our feed, but they also have their own feed now on all platforms. So you can find it on whatever you're using to listen to podcasts. Most people are listening on iTunes, Apple platform. So go search George's Box. If you liked their show, you liked the first 3 episodes and you want to continue listening, we hope you do. Subscribe, rate, and review it. You know how important it is. We've said over time to rate and review podcasts. It's doubly important for a brand new podcast like George's Box. Now is the time. They need your support. Go out there, 5 stars, and let them know why you enjoyed their first couple episodes.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for them. They're killing it. They're doing a good job. Lots of really good engagement going on social media with those guys too. And they're saying some interesting things. And there were actually some shots fired, I'd say mostly at you in this particular episode.
I got the little, you know, nice plug out of the way. That's the last time I'm going to say anything nice about them because those motherfuckers think they can take us in a fight. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, again, we talked about this before. This was mostly a shot at you. It was really just JJ putting a shot directly on your forehead saying that, you know, Keith was going to try to take care of me and that he was going to get a whole lot of unknown and dad strength. And that's one thing I'll say.
That's like, true.
If we were all to fight, which we wouldn't, but if we did, there's one of those things. There's one of these things like they're old man strength and dad strength. It's real. It's very real. And there's a stubbornness that will die inside me when I'm very deep in the ground. And that's the only time because there's a relentlessness behind something. If I start to do something, if I whatever it is, whether it's this podcast, I mean, it's been what, how many years now? And we just keep going and keep going grinding. And keep going. That's kind of
the way I am in a fight. We're grinders. And I understand that. And I get that. And that comes with age and maturity and being a dad. But what JJ doesn't realize is I have that too. And it comes from a different place. It comes from just, I am the product of a Jewish mother. And that wears you the hell down over time. And I am stubborn just like you. I will not back down. I will not give up. I will also die fighting. Maybe I haven't portrayed that outward. And you know what? It's usually because if I like you, I'm definitely not going to fight you. I will resolve the situation. But once you cross me, that's it. You're dead to me, son.
Once you cross me. That's funny. The you look at the two pairings and you would say that if we had a weigh-in that those two guys would probably be favored.
They got the bulk. They got the bulk, that's fine. On their side.
Keith's got some beach muscles, that's good. And JJ's got the girth. So it's just a matter of how you're gonna use their strengths against them.
Yeah. Well, I think endurance is me versus just JJ, I think endurance will win.
Yeah. All right, anyway. Well, we're not fighting anytime soon, but who knows? Maybe it'll happen. JJ said for a price, maybe there is a price out there.
Maybe April 13th, come out. Maybe there's a fight.
That's true.
So why don't you just quickly update people April 13th. Today, Wednesday, was the last day to purchase tickets. And the t-shirt design also, we decided on that.
Yeah, t-shirt design is out. It's extremely appropriate. It's basically a picture of Judge. And the quote is backs are against the wall. Backs are against the wall with Judge. It's a dope looking shirt. You got to check it out. One of a good friend of the show, good friend of Bronx Pinstripes, Brian Begley is an artist. He is the one who drew Aaron Judge. You could see the similar character on the Murderer's Row shirt that we had out last year. So I'm excited for that one. It's a really cool shirt, and there's a good amount of people can get it. We have, I think, 150 people coming to the game. So I'm excited. This is going to be a lot of fun, and we have just a stack section in 205, and it's going to be a blast. So it's the 13th, And everybody who's purchased a ticket, we will transfer all the tickets a couple days before the event itself. All the t-shirts have been placed. They're in production and will be mailed to you probably middle of next week. You'll get it. And then we go and we get loud and rowdy at Yankee Stadium.
Backs are against the wall. I mean, it's very fitting for after the first six games. You know, obviously their backs are not literally against the wall. It's early April, ways to go in the season. But they need to start playing like their backs are against the wall, as Aaron Judge said, with some urgency. And part of the reason is because, you know, they're losing guys left and right. Stanton goes on the DL, on the IL on Monday morning with a left bicep strain. Just heard his muscles swing the bat too hard at all those changeups. And that is not a joke. That is literally what happened. And you're saying, all right, crap, that sucks.
This is all right after we released the last episode too.
Of course, these guys started going. Yeah. Always happens that way. And, you know, obviously that's bad news that Stanton's on the injured list, but you also realize it's a muscle that will heal and he will be back. And then we get the news right before the game and Duhar's not in the lineup and he's going on the injured list with a shoulder issue. And then we find out after the game, small labrum tear. They're going to prescribe rest first, but surgery is in play. Aaron Boone dropped that nugget in his post-game press conference. Oh, yeah, surgery for Miguel Andujar is in play. If he does need surgery, that's going to end his season. This was 7 minutes after the Monday game in which the Yankees won. So we had 7 minutes of happiness this week as it came to Yankees baseball and winning, because even though on the night they won, we got some terrible news.
Yeah, and the Andujar, I went back to find the play and saw it was, I think, bottom of the fourth inning, bases were loaded, and he was taking, a bigger lead than... the thing about it is, like, catcher threw down to third, thinking that Andujar was either sleeping or had a bigger lead. He didn't have a big lead, really. He did dive back into the bag because I think he was just surprised by the throw, so maybe he was being a little nonchalant. And you could tell that when he dove back into the bag that... he was closer than he thought, and there was, like, he got to the bag sooner, and it looked like he did jam his shoulder. So that's where they said the play happened, was when he was diving back into third base. And, you know, it's really shitty. It really is, because the torn labrum, if they're going to try to rest it, and hopefully it's small enough where it can, you know, go away to a point where he can play with it and it really not be an issue, but it's probably going to be an issue. And most likely, we're going to see this, even if he comes back, like, that thing could flare back up, and then at any point, he could drop.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, you never really know if it's 100% healthy, and you never really know when it's going to go again. They say it's a small tear, which is good news, and I guess if it was worse, they would just say, you're having surgery, end it right there. Tyler Wade came up, Ubered up to the stadium. Like, they couldn't arrange a car for him from Scranton. Like, he had to really jump in an Uber.
He's fast, man. He's just aggressive. He wanted to get up here quick, so he wasn't even waiting on that.
You think they paid for the Uber?
They did. It's already been confirmed. Didn't you hear about it 97 times?
I heard about the Uber. I didn't hear if they paid for it.
Oh, yeah. The bill has been talked about many times as well. Yes, the Yankees paid for it. They picked up the tab.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah. No, he was definitely not going to be paying for it. He just said, I got to get there before the game's over. I know they have a short bench. And Tyler Wade is a good player and a good teammate, so he did what he had to do to get to the stadium.
Nice. Yeah, he arrived like during the game, but Frazier was called up in the morning, so he was there before the game. He did not play on Monday night, though. So Frazier replaced Stanton on the roster, and I got just an all-time text from my dad that I tweeted out. He said, the Yankees roster just got better in response to the fact that Stanton is going on the injured list and Clint Frazier is coming up to replace him. And I tweeted that out saying, this might even be too hot for Yankees Twitter, and boy, was I wrong, because I got 90% of the people in those comments, in those replies, agreeing with my dad.
Well, there's a reason for that. It's because Clint Frazier is big on Twitter. He's big in the Twitter crowd. In Yankees Twitter, Clint Frazier, probably one of the top like five most popular players. And I'd say Stanton is well under that, because he's not a social media guy. People have all these expectations and they see strikeouts, and for whatever reason, they think he had a horrible season last year. So there's a hatred of Stanton on Yankees Twitter you know, just starting out in the first place. And Frazier, for whatever reason, is like, you know, the guy that everybody, he's the young guy who
gets a lot of criticism, but he also has a large contingent of supporters.
He gets criticism. Media. He doesn't get much criticism from the people on Twitter, though, from the fans on Twitter. Most of them are supportive.
Yeah, well, you said top five. It's interesting. Like Aaron Judge, number one. Didi, probably number two.
Yeah.
Who would you say is number three? CeCe?
CeCe's definitely up there. But I'd say Clint is damn close to Gary Sanchez, and then...
Not Gary Sanchez. Come on. People are tearing him apart all the time on
offensively, people love his offense. They just love the potential of his offense. Yeah. Maybe a little...
like Kraken's bat. I get it.
Maybe a little Luke Voigt, but he's right there. I mean, Frazier's
Luke
right there.
Voigt probably
people like the
People
like the idea of Clint Frazier, I think.
Like the idea of Greg Bird. How about the idea of Greg Bird?
No, that's just playing us down.
Playing third base, because he was, you know, over the past couple seasons, he's taken joke reps at third base, and we get the little Twitter pictures and the videos throughout the day, and it's like, oh, Greg Bird took some grounders at third base. Like, he does this all the time, except this was tweeted out the other day. Apparently, the Yankees actually told him, go take some grounders at third base. I'm assuming if there was an emergency situation and they needed a third baseman, Bird would have been the guy.
And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about an emergency situation. We're not talking about Greg Bird going over there and playing third base, on purpose for to like start out a game. He hasn't played third base since high school. He's not fleet of foot. He's not quick. There's nothing athletic about him except for that swing. And I don't want him playing third base. I don't see him translating well over to third base. If the ball's hit right at him, he could probably catch it and throw it.
He is also the emergency catcher. So I find it hilarious that
our most injury prone player,
one of the more fragile guys on the roster, is the emergency catcher and third baseman, two of the most, you know, challenging positions to play on the field.
Well, one of the things that's concerning for me too, when you think about Bird and his injuries, and you know, just comparing to what's happened with Andujar, that labrum tear, that's what Bird had. What, 2016?
I think I thought it was a rotator cuff.
No, he had a labrum tear, and the labrum tear there's a couple of articles I read about it and how they've come back from a labrum surgery, because that's what he had, and how some of these hitters have come back from the surgery itself. And you know, one of the big things is just the power, the loss of power from a lot of these guys. So if we're looking at a torn labrum that's not being surgically repaired, but can be managed, we're probably going to see discomfort. We're probably going to see things that we're not going to like when Andujar, if he were to come back, would show at the plate, because I have a feeling it's just one of those injuries that you can probably play through, but you're not going to be where you want to be or where we all think you should be. And I don't know how that's going to fare as the season goes on. If he were to come back and he were just, you know, there's no power. Andujar's not hitting doubles anymore because his shoulder is sore or just uncomfortable. Then what is he?
Right, right. And the Yankees are very lucky that what they have right now is a very hot DJ LeMahieu to fill in at third base. But the potential loss long term of Miguel Andujar is extremely devastating to this roster. I mean, it's amazing how quickly this roster thinned out. And it's still amazing how I still think it's a pretty good roster. Certainly good enough to beat the Tigers and the Orioles. It didn't. But it's amazing just like 2 weeks ago to now, all of the injuries, all of the awards. Like, I know we tweeted out something like the amount of All-Star appearances and Silver Slugger awards and MVPs and all this stuff that is currently not contributing. Like, think about even like the guys that we knew were going to be injured. Didi, starting shortstop, starting center fielder Aaron Hicks, starting DH/left fielder, third baseman, number one starter, number five starter, eighth inning guy. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's
and then the backup shortstop who they brought in to fill in for the starting shortstop. Like, that's not shocking news to me that Troy Tulowitzki is probably going to go on the injured list, but it's still two shortstops down.
Yeah, I mean, now that Tulowitzki's out and Andujar is out and Gleyber Torres is going to be basically the starting shortstop at this point. Now Tyler Wade's what, the starting second baseman? I think is that where we are, because I assume that's where we are, with LeMahieu basically being the full-time third baseman at this point, because there's really nobody else. I mean, Tyler Wade's played a little bit of third base, but you'd rather see him up the middle rather at third base. And LeMahieu, I guess man third, he's been unbelievably solid over there. So, yeah, we're looking at a very different, like a completely different infield than were to start the season. It's insane. And not to mention, first base has not been great defensively to start the year. So there's been a swirl of bad things happening in that infield.
Right. You think about such the bad start that they got off to. And the reason I think a lot of people are freaking out isn't necessarily just because they're 2-4 and they've looked terrible. It's that they're 2-4, they look terrible, and they're scraping the bottom of the barrel on the roster now. Like, think about the bottom of the order that went up on Tuesday night when you had Talkman and Frazier and Wade and Romine. It's like that was the bottom of the Yankees order on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and it's not going to get any better anytime soon. I mean, we're going to be pulling up minor leaguers at this point and plugging them in because, you know, get used to guys like Mike Talkman because they're going to be out there. And
no, I don't want to get used to him.
Well, you're going to have to.
Three straight starts for him this week. I don't care how many injuries there are. That's unacceptable. There's no justification for starting Talkman three games in a row.
He's going to be starting more. He's going to continue
to play.
Let's
talk.
Continue to play.
How does it make sense? Okay, Monday, fine. I think I get it because Clint Frazier was just called up. So he played Monday over Clint. I wouldn't have done it, but that's what they did. And then Tuesday, he's playing instead, and Clint Frazier is DHing instead of DHing Gary Sanchez or DHing Greg Bird. Against a right-handed pitcher, you would have been DHing Greg Bird. Instead, they gave Greg Bird the start today against a left-handed pitcher. How does any of this make sense?
I mean, that doesn't make sense. Bird can hit. I mean, don't you remember the home run off of Andrew Miller in the playoffs?
Yes, I understand. But if you're going to play him against one or the other, I would have played him in both games. But if you're only going to play him in one, why not DH him against the righty instead of the lefty?
Here's the problem here. The problem I have bitching about this is that they scored one. They scored one.
I
run
know
today.
It would probably wouldn't have made a difference, but it's the principle
anything.
Of it.
The principle of it is that he's a guy now that's on this team and is going to play because they have people that they have to rest. They're gonna get Sanchez rest early in the season. It's going to happen. We knew that going into the season. They're going to make sure that he is right. They're going to make sure that these guys are the ones that were going to get rest if everybody were healthy and there was that rotation. They're still going to do that rotation. That's it. They're just plugging the next guy in. That's what they're doing.
We've got what we wanted to see for Clint Frazier at the beginning of the season was regular at bats in the minor leagues, just so he could get his mind right again playing baseball. Now he's in the major leagues. I want to see him get regular major league at bats, even if he struggles. I'd rather watch Clint Frazier struggle than Matt Talkman. See, I don't even know his name.
Look, it doesn't. I mean, at this point, he's going to be getting regular at bats. Clint Frazier is going to be getting at bats, and there's no doubt about it. Like you said, I think on Monday when he had just come up, the reason he was playing was, he had just come up. So I think
I get
it.
I understood Monday night. But I don't understand Tuesday night and Wednesday.
It's Boone getting the other guys rest. That's what it is. I mean, I'm not telling you.
Day four of the season.
Yes, they're going to do it early in the season. They get some of these guys gradually in. They don't just throw them into the meat locker and say, go for it. Even with all these injuries.
Right, because easing them in slowly is keeping them all healthy, right?
Well, yeah. Well, for particular guys, it's been fine. Like Sanchez has been healthy. Tulowitzki up until this point had been healthy. And they're doing this rotation in theory to try to keep them hurt. Nobody can predict these injuries, Susan. You cannot predict the injuries. You can't predict
it seems like we were able to predict injuries more than baseball.
But the bottom line is now we're going to be seeing Talkman. He's going to be playing. He's going to be playing a lot. Tyler Wade, playing. All these guys that are coming, whoever the hell they bring up next, going to play. So there's these guys that we don't want to see play are going to be playing.
I just think when you, on Monday, put two of your biggest bats on the injured list, and then you follow it up the next day by giving rest to Sanchez and Bird, I just don't agree with that logic. I'm sorry. If it was a scheduled day off for both of them, you go to them and say, you know what, guys, we just lost the runner-up to the Rookie of the Year and the guy who led our team in home runs last year. We need you in there tonight because we got to get a freaking win. Like, I understand it's early in the season. I'm not asking them to play 162 games, but there's certain nights, certain situations that I think as a manager you can push buttons.
I guess
that's a button I would have pushed. Like, look at what's happening around you. And Tanaka went out there Tuesday night and pitched his ass off, and they couldn't score.
I can't blame it on those two guys. No one's doing anything. Like you said, they struck out how many times today? 18 times. 18 times.
18.
That's a lot.
18 out of 27. There's only 27 outs in a baseball game.
That's a lot of freaking strikeouts.
Yep. Against the Detroit Tigers. Matthew Boyd.
Did
he's
Gary
an okay
Sanchez?
Pitcher.
Did Gary Sanchez play?
Yeah.
What about Greg Bird?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I mean, the problem is that the entire team is not hitting.
Yeah. All right.
It's a team problem.
But I'd rather watch Gary Sanchez and Greg Bird try and get out of their slumps. Not that even really Sanchez is slumping. I think he's having good at bats. He had just hit home run.
He's been hitting the ball hard.
He just hit a home run in two games in a row, and he gets the pine.
Yeah, I mean, which is
classic.
Just par for the course, yeah.
So
that's classic Yankees manager. I mean, that's not even just Aaron Boone. Like, that's a Girardi thing for a long time.
Yeah. So here, because it's the scheduled off days, and they told Gary Sanchez probably before they even left Tampa, hey, you're getting game five of the season off. Okay.
And you know what all of this is? This is all like, so all of you guys who love the analytics and love the numbers, this is part of that. Those scheduled days off is all part of that same mindset of the new school of baseball. It's like, this is how we do things because it's scheduled. And because the numbers say that if you rest every 4 or 5 days, whatever the number is, then you will be fresher the following day. And thus you will have better at bats and be more productive and be a better person for your teammates, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff is correlated. It's all in the same little bundle of numbers. It's all in the same binder.
I agree. And so, I don't disagree with
it. And I know we're
going to
talk about this because there's one of these. Can we talk about it now? Now is one of the times we're going to talk. Here, we're going to talk about this. The Gabriel Christensen put something in our group. I can't talk. He said 13 strikeouts today, 47 in five games prior to today. The Yankees.
Those numbers went up, baby.
The Yankees and Major League Baseball have a big problem with entertainment value. And look, I think he hit it spot on. I think this is one of the things that baseball and today's game is overlooking. The fact that the game is becoming more boring. It's becoming not as fun to watch. People love the home run ball. That's great. But when you're falling asleep with strikeout after strikeout after strikeout, and you're like, I'm going to go get a beer. I'm going to go sit on Twitter and see what's happening. And then pop. There's a home run, and you don't even see it happen live. You have to watch it on the replay. I guarantee that's happening to many, many fans. And when you're the new baseball with launch angle and home runs, and nobody's fundamentally sound anymore, you don't have very many DJ LeMahieu's on the team who can go down the right field line, down the left field line, get a base hit where there's a defender is, you know, maybe shifting a little further in the hole. He's going to try to hit it away from the hole. Like there's just so many things now that baseball, and I guess I'm sounding like an old guy talking about the way baseball used to be, but I'm just talking about the sport and the way it's played. It's just a more exciting game, the product itself, when you're stringing together hits. And like, I'd rather see like two, three doubles, a single and some doubles in an inning than one three-run home run all day. It's way more exciting. It's way more fun to watch. It keeps the fans engaged in the game. And you're just not seeing that anymore. The action's not there. It's becoming more boring. And that's why casual fans are becoming non-existent.
I think I agree also with Gabriel. But I think it's not even, like you said, the rally, right? Like the double, the doubles, the singles, not the home runs. Like that, yeah, fine, whatever. I really, truly don't care how they hit. How they score runs. My problem is that they don't even put the ball in play. Like,
those two come together.
I know they come together. But put the ball in play when there are runners on base. They're not doing that. So what you're getting is they're still getting their walks. They're still putting runners on base. They're not doing anything with those runners because they're just striking out. And I agree. It is very boring and it's long and it takes a long time to walk and strike out. Those things take a lot of pitches to happen. You know what doesn't take a lot of pitches? A single up the middle or even a fly ball out or a ground ball out. Those take fewer pitches.
And guess what? It's not even just the amount of pitches, because how many times do we see an at-bat like DJ LeMahieu, who had how many pitches was it the other day? It was like 18 pitches or something.
So 18
like that.
Pitches in two, 18 two pitches, of his at-bat.
But he's fouling balls off. And guess what? That's exciting. The crowd actually gets nice into that when you're seeing a guy foul off and fight for his life up there. It's not just the amount of pitches in an at-bat. It's the way it's happening. And you're talking about, you know, it's not, you don't care how they score runs, you know, the doubles and the singles, but the fact that they're not putting the ball in place, because they don't go out to do that. They're just going out to hit the home run. If they were going out to put the ball in play, you'd see more doubles and singles and triples. Do triples even happen anymore? But, you know, these are things that are, it's almost like it's the art of getting the base hit, going bat to ball, hitting them where they ain't. It doesn't exist anymore. Only in it's become very rare. And that's crazy, because that is the way baseball was made to be. That was how it was. That's how it's been played forever. It's not just like, you know, my generation. It's been forever. That's how it's been played. And now all the new analytics are changing how that's being played. And it's also changing how we watch it and how we perceive it.
Yeah. And I just think maybe it's a cop-out answer. I always lean towards the middle on these things. And it's like, I understand the analytics and I like the analytics. And I also like the old way of doing things. And I would like a blending of the two. Like, that's my ideal world. And it's almost comical, like, when they try and mix it up. Like today, in the eighth inning, the Yankees get a leadoff guy on, Voit gets on, and then he's standing there for two outs as guys strike out. And then we get the Brett Gardner pinch run with two outs, and he tries to steal a base and he gets thrown out. It's like, if you're going to try and steal a base to get in scoring position, why not do that in the first two outs? It's because they were just waiting for someone to hit a ball over the wall and everyone to trot home, two-run dinger. Like, it's crazy. It's like, it's beyond maddening.
Yeah, and it's becoming escalated right now, because we're watching the Yankees, who are so clearly, and we even thought that this year was going to be better. And, you know, we're adding a guy like LeMahieu, and I know the injuries are making this compounded. That's the problem as well. The injuries are compounding this problem, because we wouldn't see this many strikeouts and this many guys going up. And, you know, if we have our regulars in there, like Didi, you know, makes a lot of contact. He goes out there swinging. You know, Hicks is a guy.
Hicks has longer at-bats. Didi has more contact in his
much,
game.
Much better at-bats. So Andujar, obviously, we know makes a ton of contact. So if this team is fully healthy, we're not seeing this as much, obviously. But they're not. And it's compounding it. And it's impossible. It's very, very hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. And this, you know, the shocking thing, if you had told me the week before the season starts that the Yankees are going to be 2-4, I would have said, I guess their rotation really misses Severino and someone to just anchor at the back like CeCe. But that hasn't really been the case. I think the rotation overall has been pretty solid. Tanaka's been great. He was especially good on Tuesday night. Paxton, he's had one start. I think his defense let him down, as we said. Happ has really been the only pitcher that has not pitched well out of the six games so far.
Yeah, and you throw away, I mean, when Happ came out and gave up that home run ball, I mean, he definitely settled in more. Like
four innings, four runs, two homers allowed. I mean, he settled in after the first inning, but it was not a good start.
It was not a good start. No. It was not a good start. But the bottom line is the pitching is not the problem for any of this stuff. Like, yeah,
no,
there were some problems with Happ with the home run. But everybody else, there's still no depth, but we're not going to get that early in the season usually. Like Tanaka went, 6 2/3 the other night. That was a miracle. Like when you
pitch into the seventh inning on this Yankees team, like fine, I'll take that every night with this bullpen.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, that's been a great start for a long time.
Six innings is beautiful. If Tanaka, Paxton, and hopefully Severino gets healthy and hopefully Happ throughout the season is giving the Yankees six innings on a regular basis, I'm fine with that. It's the guys like Herman and Loaisiga and probably CeCe that you're not going to get the six innings out of, but that's okay. That's part of the deal they signed up with these guys.
Right. I mean, but as the season's going on, if Herman and Loaisiga are guys that we have to see going out there every fifth day, they're going to be, you know, getting more innings. They're not getting them right now. Loaisiga, you know, I know doesn't have a ton of innings under his belt. He was in Double A last year, for God's sakes, came up and had some starts in the pros or in the majors, but they're not going to be going stretching him to
pulled him
200 innings
four.
If they needed to. Yeah. They're going to limit him a bit. And same with Herman, but Herman could stretch out further. If he were to, you know, have a spot long-term, he would definitely be able to go as long as he could you know, pitch past the fifth inning.
Right, but so both of those guys were – so Herman pitched five innings, and he had to avoid damage a bunch because of the five walks, but he still – we saw that swing and miss stuff. He didn't give up any earned runs, and he struck out seven batters. And then Loaisiga today also worked in and out of trouble a couple times because of the four walks and four innings, but only one earned run. And they pulled Loaisiga after 70 pitches. I think I heard Kay on the broadcast say, you know, they're still trying to stretch out Loaisiga, so, yeah, you know, maybe next time we see him go 90 pitches or something.
Right. And the walks for those two guys are definitely the area that they need to clean up. And I've talked about this with Loaisiga in the past, is, you know, walks were not an issue for him in the minor leagues. And for whatever reason, he's not getting, you know, the same calls, or he's not able to locate that fastball as well. But in the first inning,
he might also just not trust his stuff as much in the majors.
I saw him paint outside black 98 miles an hour in that first inning. And that kid looked, when he's on, when it's so effortless, he looks so good. 98 miles an hour, just a BB to punch out Miguel Cabrera. I mean, absolutely beautiful pitch. And then Herman, one of my favorite guys to watch, you know, with the different types of mixing up pitches that he has in his arsenal. And if he's able to get through the first inning, because that's one of the big problem areas for him, you start to see him settle in and he becomes really good. And I know you mock it a little bit because you think it's not on purpose, but it is on purpose. He has an out pitch as a high changeup and it's filthy and people can't hit it. And you have to have brass balls to throw that pitch, and he does it, and I love it.
The high changeup is the riskiest pitch in baseball.
I absolutely,
because you know what a high changeup is? It's a batting practice fastball high in the zone. And I understand that people are out ahead of it because they don't expect an 80 mile an hour pitch.
Nope.
At, you know, belt high.
Nope. Looks like a fastball, not a fastball, way out in front. It's amazing. It's a beautiful pitch.
The belt high changeup, just fooling hitters all over the place. I guess a positive update on the injury front is we might see Sabathia back in the next homestand. So maybe we'll get on the first BB Crew event, CC coming back.
That'd be nice. I mean, on the injury front too, like the Andujar news, it's better than, you know, the fact that they're going to try and see how this thing heals up, and, you know, maybe a cortisone shot can go in there and make it feel 100%. Like, it could. It's happened in the past. If it's such a small tear that becomes a non-issue, that's a possibility. If they got to go under the knife and they got to mix, you know, they got to start cutting and they got to do things like that, that's when you start probably seeing more of a weakness. But it just depends if that labrum tear can stay where it is and not get worse.
Yeah. This is, again, where we need that doctor to come on and explain tissue injuries to us, because we are talking out of our ass.
No, but I mean, it's just common sense in the way that...
Oh, yeah, common sense. Common medical sense.
It is common sense. If you have a tear, it can get bigger. It can get worse.
Dr. Scott.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll talk about this all day
long. What medical school did you go to again?
Oh, dude, I've read tons of medical journals. Don't worry about it. I have read many medical journals. The fact is that if you're going under the knife, like, that's it. Like, you're done. If you're not going to, they obviously think it's at a point where it's not going to get any worse, and now you're just dealing with either a pain tolerance thing, or you are, you know, it'll heal. It'll go away.
Yeah, but they should have signed Machado to play third base.
That's the most annoying narrative on social media.
Because, of course, back in January when the Yankees were talking to Manny Machado's agents, the Yankees knew, oh, on game four of the season, Miguel Andujar is going to tear his labrum.
Yeah, and MLB is like way up Bryce Harper's ass right now. So we're seeing practically every at-bat that he's
had. Bad news. It's bad news for Yankees fans right now.
Yeah.
Well, all we've talked about is negative. So I want to try and turn this around, talk about something positive. New segment. I'm going to call this segment, What Awesome Thing Did Aaron Judge Do This Week? And do you know what awesome thing he did this week? He saved the one win that we have to talk about on Monday night with a diving play in right field in the eighth inning after Ottavino had walked two batters, looked kind of off, then gives up a hard line drive out to right field. Aaron Judge coming in, laying out. Everyone's holding their breath. Like, don't roll over that wrist. Don't break your wrist, big guy.
Don't Hideki Matsui that thing.
Right.
Because that's the first thing that went through my mind as soon as I saw it. You see the tip of his glove start bending a little bit, but no, he's just a hoss, and it just goes right through. It was beautiful. The guy, and he had another phenomenal catch today with a line drive over his head, where he had an initial bad beat and recovered immediately, and made a great leaping catch into the wall too. Like another hold your breath moment, as he kind of flexes and starts feeling things and making sure that everything's okay when he walks away from the wall. But the guy's unbelievable.
Yeah, check the wall for dents. But the Aaron Judge, like, no home runs yet still on the season. He had an RBI single today. But just still, like, it's those plays like on Monday night that the Yankees do not win the game without Aaron Judge in right field. So just, you know, it is, I say this with all sincerity, it is so much fun to watch him every night.
And the beauty about him is, yeah, he hits a ton of home runs. And yeah, he does strike out, but he does get base hits. He actually will take advantage of situations. Today, LeMahieu was on second base. Runner in scoring position. I think there was one out. He hits a beautiful little single to right field. LeMahieu scores. He hits it in the hole right where nobody was. Not trying to hit the home run. Not trying to do too much. Just giving going with whatever the pitcher gave him and slapping that thing through. And that's why I absolutely love Aaron Judge.
Right. And it's the affecting the game positively in multiple areas. He also stole a base today.
Yeah, so. I don't want him doing too much of that.
He's out there playing like his back is against the wall. He's the one who said it.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. There's
appreciate
no doubt about
you, Aaron.
It. Yeah, I appreciate it. I just not too many stolen bases.
Yeah. And Ottavino, we kind of glossed over Ottavino on the last episode, but he has really impressed so far. He's got a zero ERA. His K rate is 13.5 per nine innings. So just really nasty stuff out of Ottavino.
So is Ottavino trying to keep his ERA with his number? I like that.
Ooh.
Trying to make sure that zero is staying up there. Could you imagine if he had a zero ERA all season long and wore number zero?
Yeah, instantly, that's like Hall of Fame season right there.
I know. It's perfect.
You gotta frame that shit. Going to Baltimore, you know, maybe getting away, change of scenery, right? Like that old cliche. Is a change of scenery going to be a good thing for these Yankees?
I don't care what the cliche is. It's something. It's a different look, you know? Let's get a different look, whatever the hell that is. If that means leaving town and going into Baltimore, fine. Fine. Go hit a bunch of home runs in Camden Yards. If that's what we're going to do. If we're going to hit home runs here, let's do it. Let's go to Camden Yards and hit a shit ton of home runs.
I mean, obviously the Yankees were still a good road team last year. They had a 580 winning percentage, but they scored fewer runs per game and they had a lower run differential on the road than they did at home. So we always talked about, especially going into the playoffs, remember, we're like, get this team at home and they're a different beast. That didn't translate in the playoffs and it hasn't translated in the first six games of the season. So I mean, I'm just tricking myself into saying, oh, the positive takeaway here is the Yankees are leaving town. They can clear their mind. You know, sometimes road trips bond a team, right?
I mean, they can, I guess. It's a matter of what team they're trying to bond together, though, because no one's on this team right now. This is the problem.
That's okay. Let the scrappy guys bond together. Someone needs.
I don't want
a big
anybody
hit.
Bonding with there Talkman. Needs to be, I want Talkman off the team.
Yeah, no talk. Do not bond with Talkman.
Nobody talk to Talkman.
Clint Frazier. Get Clint Frazier up in a big spot. You know, a big go ahead RBI double in the seventh inning. Someone getting a walk off or like making a diving catch to save a game. Like someone needs a Gatorade bath on this road trip to bond them together.
Yeah, they do. They need some good things to happen. That's the bottom line. They need to start playing better baseball, and they need good things to happen because they can't. One of the worries that you were talking about with fans and the fact that they're 2-4, like 2-4, whatever. You know, like it's not a freaking hole that anybody can't climb out of. And the problem is though, is that when you're 2-4, you look out at who's playing, and all your guys are out. You're practically your entire team is injured. So now you have to say, like, whoever's out there, you gotta man up, next man up, let's go and start turning that, you know, start turning that that record around. But that's the worrisome is when you look out there, like, who are you supposed to depend on besides Aaron Judge?
Right. If they had their full 25-man squad that they left Tampa with still healthy, yeah. I'd say, you know what, they're just gonna figure it out. 2-4 sucks, but they're probably gonna be, you know, back to 4-4 before we know it, and then never look back. But It's when you see the roster is thinning out, and I don't trust Talkman. I don't trust Tyler Wade. I like Clint Frazier, but I don't trust him really. Like all these guys, I don't trust them because they're not major leaguers yet for a reason. So until we see that, it's gonna be a struggle. But we had teased it last week that you and I were gonna start reading Inside the Yankees Empire. You have not started reading it yet. I did start to read it. I got through a chapter, so I'm going to pat myself on the back for reading a book. And I wanted to talk about, so one thing I found interesting was it talked about the differences between the three managers, Joe Torre, Joe Girardi, Aaron Boone. And there was a quote. It said, "Players don't want a friend. What they want, without knowing it, is a dad." And the author said Joe Torre was the good dad. He eventually evolved into the checked out dad, which I found funny. Joe Girardi was the stern dad, and Aaron Boone is the cool dad. And it's like, you think about it, and it's true. Those are dead on assessments of all three guys.
But isn't the cool dad the dad that's trying to be your friend?
The cool dad's a gray line. Yeah, the cool dad and the good dad, there's a very gray line between those two. The good dad is the guy that's like, you know, if you're out drunk, don't drive. You know, call me up late at night, 2 a.m. I'm going to come pick you up. Whereas the cool dad's like, hey, here's some weed brownies.
That's the guy that's trying to be your friend. And if that's Aaron Boone, then, you know, the thing is that when you see who said that, by the way, the players don't want a friend. They want
it was a quote in there. I don't remember who the quote was attributed to. It was not the authors who said it. They were quoting somebody.
Okay. So yeah, they want a father figure. They want a leader. They want a guy that's going to tell them what to do, but at the same time, listen to their concerns and actually, you know, take them and not just dismiss them. And I have a feeling a lot of people thought Girardi was the guy that dismissed things and said, no, this is the way you do it. That's it. He was more of a drill sergeant, like a general, more of a military personnel. Whereas Boone, the cool dad who's going to give you the weed brownies, you know, sometimes maybe you think you could get something by that guy.
Right. Well, it's hard.
Because you can.
Sometimes it's hard to go out and swing a bat when you're stoned on some weed brownies. And maybe that's the problem, because I think all three of those types of managers, the good, the stern, and the cool, have a place on certain teams. And I think it depends on the team. You know, the book talked about how Brian Cashman, there's this new understanding in the game that players today, they can't deal with a stern dad. And that players no longer were buying into Joe Girardi stuff because they were tired of the stern dad act. But
I don't necessarily buy that.
But they were one game away from the World Series.
Yeah.
And it's way too early to call things on Aaron Boone. I know that. And they won 100 games last year. But they also got their ass kicked in the playoffs. And they've played sloppy to start this season, and they were sloppy to start last season. So at what point do you need a little bit more sternness to say, hey, get your head out of your ass. Stop throwing the ball into center field. How about you go out there and don't swing at three straight changeups with bases loaded? How about you play, you know, go out there and play hard. Like Aaron Judge said, play with a little urgency. I think there is maybe a little too much laxness, if that's even a word.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's way too early to assess.
Of course,
because
it's too
early. All the amount of things that are happening with the injuries, I think the injuries right now are obviously the biggest problem. And if these guys were healthy, we'd see a different team. We'd see different results. But you know what is a good thing, even though it didn't play well for the Yankees this past weekend, is that they're still going to go to Baltimore and they're still going to play and I don't care how they're playing right now, they're not a good team. They're not a good baseball team. The Yankees, even with all these injuries, are a better baseball team. And I know that they have some young guys that are playing with their hair on fire, and that's working out for them. But at some point, the Yankees have to realize that.
Talking about the Orioles are playing.
Yeah. What did I say? Yankees? They're not playing with the hair on fire.
I was going to say, what hair on fire do you see?
It's the opposite of that. Clint Frazier is the only one that has hair on fire. But they need to go out there and realize that their talent level is that much better, and that they should be better, and that they need to be better. And that's where the urgency comes in. We are a better team. Act like it. Act like the New York Yankees. Act like you've been there. Act like you know that you're going to come in and you're going to win that game, and you're not going to strike out freaking 18 times against the Detroit Tigers.
What kind of manager would you be out of those three dads?
Whenever I coach, because I coached like pony ball for 10 years, and you know, I always had you have to have order, I think, on a team. If you don't have order and responsibility and accountability, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. making sure that the guys are doing things, you have like field generals and making sure that there's a lot of ownership within the team and it's not just coming from you, but you have your certain guys that you know are going to keep things in check. Like, I think that's extremely important. But you also have to have a type of relationship where guys will listen to you and trust what you say, and they know that you're going to go, you know, to battle for them. There's a nice blend of all of this stuff, I think. But in the moments that you need to be stern, you have to be able to be Stern, and on the other side of it, you have to be able to be respected at the same time. And right. I think that's a fine line. And I don't know where Aaron Boone is on that poll. I think he is there. I think they do respect him. I think he knows how to communicate that well. But we don't really see him getting on guys at the moment. And maybe he just does that behind the scenes, which, you know, we won't know until someone writes a book about it in 20 years. So it's hard to tell exactly what that is, but from all accounts, as far as like dynamic and the way that he manages as a man to these guys, I see no issues with it at this point.
Right. And I think
that I don't like the analytical part.
I think being the good dad who's not afraid to be stern at the right moments is like the ideal manager.
But you just can't come out of nowhere. It's got to be part of what
you do.
No,
the players need to understand that's part of your makeup. That's always in there. That's always one level down.
Yes.
And if we mess up, Stern Dad's coming out to play, and it's not going to be pretty.
There's a disappointment level, right? You don't want to disappoint.
Right, but you're going to be the good dad. Like, Joe Torre was praised for how he could bring a clubhouse together, and he had the trust of all of his players and the love of all of his players.
Right.
But he wasn't stern, really. He didn't need to be stern because he had Paul O'Neill and David Cohen in that clubhouse every day.
That's it.
Like, if you messed up, you're going to hear about it from those two guys.
And I think we're seeing a little bit of that with Aaron Judge right now. And those
statements. But see, Boone the next day said, oh, no, that's, you know, he kind of couched the statements from Aaron Judge. Let your future captain, your best player on the team, let his statement stand out there.
Yeah. I mean, but that's part of it. Like you said, when Torre had his guys in the dugout who he knew would take care of the players inside there. And to a certain extent, they have to manage themselves on that level. There has to be an accountability within the team itself. It can't always come from a coach. It's got to come from within. And once they have that, once there's that accountability within, and these guys are looking around next to each other and they all know, and they look in each other's eyes and they know damn well that each guy is there for the right reasons, is doing the right thing, is preparing the right way. Like, that's when you start getting a collective unit, and that's when you start seeing, you know, very good chemistry. And the talent then shows way better when you start seeing that. And I know a lot of people don't believe in chemistry, but I think you're full of shit if you don't.
I think you're full of shit too, because I think this team had it in April and May, late April, May, and June of last year. I think this team was oozing chemistry. Yeah. And it showed up on the field every night with the late inning comebacks and the smoothness of their play. You know, the sloppiness ended in that hot streak. So I think it's in these guys. It's just we're not seeing it right now. That's really why we're frustrated, right? Like, if the team just sucked, then they suck. But we know they don't suck.
They don't suck.
Stop playing like you suck.
They need to stop sucking.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Reminder for upcoming Monday's show to submit mailbag questions and call the voicemail line. That is a huge part of every Monday's episode. We want to hear from you. We want to interact with you guys. So you can submit mailbag questions, bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can tweet us, Facebook message us, Instagram us, whatever you're feeling comfortable about getting in touch. Send us those mailbag questions. Light up the voicemail line. I know, Scott, your phone was buzzing off the hook after today's loss. 646-480-0342. Any final words before we head to Baltimore?
Like you said, I appreciate you guys helping me put my son to sleep, because the phone was literally on the nightstand buzzing. It was just continuously buzzing for 10 minutes, because I think we got 15 or 16 calls in on Skype of our phone number goes to a Skype account that you guys call for the voicemail line, and it just buzz and buzz and buzz and buzz and buzz. So lots of boisterous calls, I'd say. I'm sure that they'll be very entertaining.
Love it. Can't wait for that on Monday show. We'll talk to you guys then.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.